pray for our government. I certainly agree with that. It's important to remember that those folks are just people, even though they make some pretty weird decisions at times. They certainly need our prayers for many reasons. I brought something with me this morning that I wonder if you've seen before. Yeah? This one's new. It's in very good shape. A dollar bill. Yeah, there seems to be a relationship between this and what I've done in the past. Seems like if I work a few minutes, I get one of these. There's a hourly rate thing that figures into that. Is that right, Ben? I don't know. Maybe some of your salary, so it really there's no real strict correlation. But somehow if I work, I get these. You know, if I work a little bit longer, I get another one of these. And it's pretty neat. It just kind of keeps growing. I like that. It's a good trend. And you continue to work. And, you know, after you get one of these, you can go up here to Wendy's, and they've got the value meal, right? And for one of these, I can get a pretty small burger. It's not a bad deal. Fries, a drink. I've got a full meal deal right here. And as I go along and I continue to work, I can actually get a little bit ahead of the value meal and I can afford a house. And it's just a wonderful system, isn't it? Growing and actually beginning to think about saving. Wow, there's a concept. To get ahead of my bills, to actually be able to save a dollar or two or three. You know, I really like the system, though, that says there's something called a 401k. Have you heard of that before? I don't think it's a very new concept. It's been around for a while. But a 401k. Now, somehow or another, as I work, my employer takes some of my dollars and he sends it to different places. One place is to the government. They get some of this, right? And then one of the other places is to my little savings account thing that I've got working, my little 401k. And they told me if I put my dollar in there and I left it there, eventually it would become $2 or $3. And if everything goes right, cross your fingers, I could actually retire. Wow. I like this. It's a really good system. And so I've got this plan. I'm going to save money. I'm going to do the 401k thing. Lord willing, I'm going to have my house paid for. I'm going to have my car paid for. And when we reach that ripe old age of whatever it is, I'm on Easy Street. I get to travel. I get to go do things I want to do. I've always wanted to do all my life. And life's good. That's my plan. And I'm sticking to it. This is the way it's going to be. Great. Well, you know, sometimes there's folks a ways away from here on the East Coast, a place called Washington, D.C. And it seems like there's times when they make decisions that begins to affect my plan. Have you ever noticed that before? It seems like they kind of make changes. Wait, no, that's not my deal. My deal is I put money away, I'm going to save it, and I'm going to get to the end of this run, and I'm going to have a nice retirement, and life's going to be good. What are you doing up there? Why did I send you up there? Aren't you supposed to be making good decisions for me so that I can realize my American dream? But yet, it seems like they waste money. It seems like they cause things to happen that before you know it, there's this thing called inflation and unemployment. And the stock market gets a little wacky. And let a plane run into a building in D.C. and all in Washington and New York City, and all of a sudden, my 401k is a 101A. And my plans are where? Where are my plans? What am I going to do? You know, one of these things is actually 6.14 inches long. You probably knew that. You've handled them for so long. And it's amazing the rate that we go through these things, isn't it? Individually, privately. But what's even more amazing is the rate that our government can go through them. The last time I looked, our national debt was $13.6 trillion, with a T, dollars. And that increases on a daily rate of 4.14 billion dollars. A year? No. A month? No. A week? No. Every day. If we were to cash everything out right now and reconcile the U.S. government, you would owe them, everyone in your household would owe them $44,000. That's what it would take to cash things in today, and that will continue to grow up, go up, so it would appear. But I can't begin to wrap my mind about around 13.6 trillion of these. Can you? Can you comprehend that rate? I have trouble with that. And so I thought, okay, well, 6.4 inches, right? The moon is a long ways away. Let's line these things up one by one so I can get my mind wrapped around how big this number is. And I did the calculations. My calculator hesitated for a little bit, but it finally kicked out a number. 27 round trips to the moon, lining up your dollars end to end would get you $13.6 trillion. Does that sound about right? 27 trips? Actually, you're going to have to move the decimal point three places over. That's 27,833 round trip trips to the moon. That's hard to say. Okay, now I'm beginning to see that that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money. That's a lot of these little dollar things that are so important to me. These little dollar things that somehow I'm connected with this terrible situation. And it's affecting my nirvana. It's affecting my plan. Those people are a mess. On October the 19th, 1987, that day was known as Black Monday. Do you remember Black Monday? I do. What happened on Black Monday? Something called the Dow, which who knows what all that's about, but the Dow dropped 508 points in one day. Indeed, that's a record. And that does include 9-1-1, by the way. And the result of that was people's best decision was to, along Wall Street, open the window up and jump. This is how they responded to this kind of reaction. And I'm concerned about my 401k. It seems that because of things that are outside of my control, a government that seems to be out of control, instead of getting to go to France on a regular basis, I have to spend one weekend a year down in Branson, and that's going to be about the size of it. And when I come back, I get to stand in front of this funny building and say, "Welcome to Walmart," so I can have grocery money. You know what I want to know is, I had my plan. I did what they told me to do. I worked hard. Whose fault is it? I want to know who's in charge. I want my money back. I want my life back. I want my dreams back. I want to live in the house that I built. I want to have the nice car. I want my retirement just the way I planned it. And I want to know who's to blame. We have our problems, don't we? We live in the greatest nation in the world. I think the greatest nation probably that's ever existed. My focus is a 401k. I'm no historian,
The historian will follow me and he'll correct probably several of these things that I'm about to say. But think about prior societies. You know, as you see a little child here, and I love those noises. I always remember Rick's dad standing in a pulpit saying, "That noise back there, I like that. We like those noises. That baby's precious." What baby isn't? And we coddle them and we nurture them. And if they're sick, we pay any amount of money to fix them. Get them taken care of. And yet there's been societies in the past that slaughtered them. In fact, slaughtered people. Look at the governments that have gone through and eradicated or tried to eradicate different portions of their societies. One comes to mind, Hitler. Right? Would you say he was the cruelest and had killed the most people in all time as a leader? Those of your historians know that's not the case. He's recent to us. We've seen the atrocities. But as a leader, he only killed 20 to 25 million because of his policies and the things that he did. Only 20 to 25 million of these precious things here. What's a life worth? Is anybody watching? Who's controlling this? Well, there was a guy named Stalin that bettered him. Stalin was the general secretary of the Communist Party of the Soviet Union. Under his watch and his policies, the estimates are 40 to 60 million people died. Does anybody care? Who's in control? Chairman Mao gets the prize as far as recorded history is concerned that I could find. He was a communist leader of the People's Republic of China from 1949 to 1976. Under his watch, the best estimates are between 40 and 70 million people lost their lives. Because of his policies, because of his decisions. We have problems in the United States, no question about it. And my dream, my American dream, may be on the rocks. Here's a guy who led a country that killed almost 70 million people. Who's in control? Is anybody watching? Is anybody concerned about this? What about God? How does He fit into all of this? I appreciate the brother reading Romans, the 13th chapter there. That's where my mind goes, and that's certainly one of the passages that we were given to consider this morning. Let every soul be subject to the governing authorities, for there's no authority except from God. No question about it. Somehow, God oversees these things. We could go to the Old Testament time after time after time. We could see where God's hand was directly involved, and the Scripture shows us how He was directly involved. I don't know that I can make that direct application today. Is God to blame? What I've chosen to do is take a look at a time when God came amongst us. And look at a few places where Jesus interacted with with the government of the time. Do you remember how He was welcomed by the government? How was He welcomed by the government? Well, all babies 2 years and under are to be killed. There's a king coming. Want to make sure he's taken care of. So it wasn't that Jesus picked a kindly time to come. If he'd come now, his 401k would have been on the rocks, but he'd still have his life, right? Legend had it that Herod slew his own son. Macrobius said that it would have been better to be Herod's hog than his son. Gives you a little insight into what kind of leader he was. Ruthless. Not only did Jesus have to deal with the government that was local there, but He had to deal with the Romans.
And I think the government that he seems to deal with the most are the Jews. Over and over and over, the leaders of the Jews were attacking him. So surely Jesus had something to say about these powers, about these authorities, since God somehow was involved with their installation. What did Jesus say about it? Surely it affected him. We know it did at the end for sure. Matthew, the 10th chapter, the 18th verse. You, Jesus speaking here, you apostles, is who he's talking to, will be brought before governors and kings for my sake as a testimony to these and to the Gentiles. But when they deliver you up. Notice there's not a question here about whether this is going to happen. When they deliver you up. Don't worry about what you should speak. And he goes on to explain about the Holy Spirit, how he's going to be there and support them. Where's the indignation? Where's the concern about how wrong this is? And shouldn't Caesar do something? Shouldn't the local municipality do something about the wrong treatment of you people? No. When they deliver you up, speak the truth. And I'll give you the strength to do it. Matthew 17, 24. And when they came to Capernaum, they that received tribute. Now who would that be? I think that'd be the tax collectors, wouldn't it? They that received tribute, money, came to Peter and said, "Does your master pay tribute?" Peter answered, "Yes. Yes, he does." And we go on down there and we see in the 27th verse, "Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them," Jesus says. "Notwithstanding, lest we should offend them. Go ye to the sea and cast a hook, take a fish that comes up, open his mouth, pull the money out, and take it to them for me and thee." We're going to pay it. Why? Don't want to offend them. Where's the talk about, "This is outrageous. You can't be taking this much money from me. You don't do a thing for me. You just waste it." Where's Jesus' indignation about the leadership? In Matthew 22:17, the Pharisees approach. You knew they're going to come on the scenes. "Tell us, therefore, what do you think? Is it lawful to pay taxes to Caesar or not?" Oh boy, they got him on this one. But Jesus perceived their wickedness and said, "Why do you test me, you hypocrites? Show me the tax money." And they brought him a denarius. And he said to them, "Whose image and inscription is on this?" And he said to them, "Caesar's." And he said to them, "Render therefore to Caesar the things that are Caesar's, and to God the things that are God." Jesus takes it and cuts it twain. He makes it clear. There's things that belong to Caesar. There's things that are right. We don't want to offend them. We're just passing through. Meet that obligation. Did he agonize over it? Was this a real burden for him? Was he concerned about who was coming up next and what their policies were going to do to him? I couldn't find it anywhere. Did he honor them? Absolutely. Was that what his life was all about? When Peter tried to dissuade him from what Jesus was about to do, his response was, "Get thee behind me, Satan. I want nothing to do with you. You're taking me off task." And so Jesus delineates between Caesar and God. Ephesians 2nd chapter, the first verse, I think we see a little bit more information about this delineation. A practical application for us, for sure. Ephesians 2:1. "And you he made alive," you, "he made alive, who were dead in the trespasses and sin, in which you once walked according to the course of this world, according to the prince of the power of the air, The Spirit who now works in the sons of disobedience. That's the spirit of the world, the sons of disobedience, among whom we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh. We were there too. We were there too, pursuing the things of Caesar, pushing and competing in the world, power, dominion, control, wealth, money. Bring it to me. I deserve it. Among whom we also all once conducted ourselves in the lust of the flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were in nature children of wrath, just as others. You know, it's interesting that the word sin here that he chooses has to do with missing the target for a sharpshooter. The sin is that we take our minds off the things of God and we put them on the things of Caesar and we miss the target. And the word for trespass, all I have to do is slow down just a little bit and I'll get it out, is to slip and fall. Not being sure of my footing. Not being sure of the path that I'm on. Not being sure that the light is showing me the way. That I might travel and traverse this course as God would have me to. The course of the world. My 401k, my earthly possessions. My plan. My goal. The easy street. Retirement should be great. I don't want anything about Walmart and greeting over there when I'm 70. What's that about? I've paid my dues. What if it's all gone, really? I want my picket fence. In our lives, we can have a true lack of definition, a true lack of direction, a true lack of aim. These things of the government that we think the government causes can take our minds and direct them in places that they ought not to be. In 1 John, I think we see some fundamentals. Things that we ought to be sure of. Things that ought to keep our feet on the path, keep our aim true, that we're not pulled away and caused to miss the target. In John 5 and 18, he says there that we know. And I want you to notice how many times he uses that term. We know. We know that whoever is born of God does not sin. But he who has been born of God keeps himself. And the wicked one does not touch him. Is that a promise in there? Is my mind focused on him? Is that what I'm thinking about? Does that help the fence? I don't know how that hedge works. I don't know. But I know if I focus on what's true and what's just and what's right and what's pure, if that's where my mind is, that's going to benefit me. We know, verse 19, that we are God's and the whole world lies under the sway of the wicked one. The sway of the wicked one is, I've got to have this and I'm going to be all positioned perfectly for the rest of my life because I've done this. And the government is going to leave me alone and I'm just going to have this ideal life. That sounds a little carnal to me. We know that we're God's. Isn't that where the treasure is? Verse 20. And we know that the Son of Man has come and has given us an understanding that's far different from the world, far different from the things that they understand. Our purpose here is different. Our goal here is different because we know that the Son of Man has come to give us an understanding that we may know Him and what is true. I love that. Wade handled that last night for a little while. It's that paradigm that you have in your life. What's true? What's just? What is my standard? Where should my mind be? What is truth? Does that
ring a bell with you? Somebody else asked that question a while back. About 2,000 years ago, as Jesus stood before him, our last instruction from Christ in this lesson, Pilate in John 18, therefore said unto them, art thou a king then? And Jesus answered, thou sayest, I am a king. To this end I was born, and for this cause I came into the world, that I should bear witness unto the truth. That's where we need to stand. That's why he came. Everyone that is of the truth heareth my voice. Are we listening? In verse 38, Pilate thought he had him. So then, King of the Jews, what is truth? What is truth? I find it interesting that Pilate turned around and walked out and said, you know, guys, I can't find anything wrong with this fellow. John 19, verse 10. Then saith Pilate unto them, speaketh now not unto me? Again, talking to Jesus, very same conversation. Knowest thou not that I have the power, to crucify you? Jesus answered, thou couldst have no power at all against me, except it were given thee from above. Therefore he that delivereth me unto thee has the greater sin. Wow. Jesus freely submitted himself to the powers. He knew where they came from. He knew what control they had. And he fully submitted himself to them. That was his plan. Back to Matthew, the 22nd chapter. Whose image is inscribed on this? I don't know what Caesar looks like, but I think it says George Washington there. He's somebody significant, I think. I find another irony as we consider this piece of paper. Ever noticed that? In God we trust? Are you sure? How important is this? I think that's a paradox. These are important. The government affects the value of these. The government affects my life directly. They take a lot of these from me. I don't know what they do with them. Probably waste them. Go on junkets. But it's like that old question. What about the poor little black boy in the middle of Africa that is born and raised and ultimately dies and he's never heard the gospel? What's God going to do about that? What's God going to do about that poor little boy that's never heard the gospel? I think the answer to that is, what does that have to do with me? You have it on your laps. You're not that poor little boy. God in His justice knows what to do about that situation, and I don't. What about this atrocious government that spends money, burns money like it's free? Who's in control? How does God interact with those people? How does He put them in place? How does all that work? I submit to you the answer is the same. What has that got to do with me? My kingdom is not of this world, is what Jesus said. And so, check the image on the idol. Yes, I said idol. Check the image on the idol and see which altar we've actually pulled up to. Do we worship our lifestyle? Is it that important? It's hard. It's a major struggle for me. I think I'm a hard worker. I'd like to think that the plans I make are going to turn out. But how many hours do I spend considering those plans, making those preparations for something Peter says is just going to burn? Lay up for yourself treasures in heaven. I wish I could answer the question this morning, but I don't have enough information from the Scriptures to do it for you. Who's in control? May I suggest that you could be. You could decide that the things of our government and the things that affect us on the outside really aren't all that important. Our preparation for the return of our Master. We need to hit the mark. Lord bless you as you walk before Him.